Hello, welcome to Prime Lenses. I'm Ian. Each week, I speak with a guest about three lenses that have meant something to them on their photographic journey. Well, usually. This week, I'm speaking to Sam, aka 2-Bit Boy, the creator of the 2-Bit Toy, which is a modification kit for the Game Boy camera. Now, those of you old enough to remember Game Boy camera will remember that it is a 2-bit black and white camera set that was developed for the Nintendo Game Boy back in the 90s. It's a crazy piece of kit. I have one. It is both brilliant and terrible. He makes a modification kit for the camera that can be 3D printed that takes the innards of the camera out, puts them into a shell, and allows you to use different lenses with the camera. It's a wild idea. It's a crazy thing. It looks super cool, and very much like, actually, it was made to work with the Game Boy, which I love. Becca Fasaci, friend of the show, introduced me to these kits a little while ago. She made a video about using one, which you can find on YouTube. But this is exactly the sort of madness I love to delve into, especially with my background in games. And Sam was good enough to give up some of his weekend to talk to me about it. This episode is nerdy in the best ways possible. I hope you enjoy it. Here's Sam. For making the time to do this. It's very nice. It's odd to do one of these on a Sunday. I don't often do them at the weekend, but it's quite nice, you know. Different vibe.
Yeah, having a couple of kids and a busy life, then it's hard to fit things in, isn't it?
Yeah. How have you negotiated successfully to spend an hour to yourself?
Well, I've sent the wife out with the kids. So there wasn't actually, I don't know what it's like up near you at the moment, but it's a bit of a heat wave down here at the moment. So she didn't really want to take them out to the park because it's baking hot. So the grandparents were away and they live around the corner. So they've just gone and commandeered their house.
Well, daddy's going to be a celebrity for an hour. So yeah, he's going to get his moment in the sun. That's cool. It's been lovely up here. It's been beautiful, beautiful weather. Today we're getting a bit of rain. All the streams and the lochs are very low at the moment.
We
need some rain, but we're not getting tons of it. What we're getting is like heavy showers for about 5 minutes.
And then
it's humid and weird.
Okay. Well, I know it's really hot. Although it did rain yesterday, but yeah, it's been nice and warm down here, proper seaside weather.
Oh, nice. How close to the seaside are you then?
We're about a kilometre walk.
Amazing.
Directly south of the sea. So probably the furthest south from where you are.
Yeah.
All the way to the city, yeah.
Oh, cool. Because my grandma lives in Lymington, like on the south
coast. Okay,
Yeah, not far away.
Yeah, it's a great place to be when you've got nice weather.
Yes, definitely is. No, it's really, really lovely. It's very cool.
Yeah.
And good place to kind of wander around with like little people as well, because you can kind of go to a bit, beaches are endlessly entertaining.
Yeah, loads to do down here. So, like, we have got a car, but living in the city, like, we can walk to everything. Everything's close. And then the other thing on the seafront, when it's a day like today, so many people, gets quite busy. Obviously, sometimes that's a negative, but if you're kind of walking around with your camera and you want to get some shots, there's tons of stuff to be taking photos of.
This explains why there's so many seagulls. You've got some amazing pixel seagulls and birds and things in your
field. I'm trying to cut back on the amount of bird photography I'm doing. it's just happened.
Yeah, comes for us all.
yeah
you like to spend outside. We'll be gardening in 5 minutes, Sam, like before you know it this will be us.
Lots of people watching. Seagulls, boats.
Yeah.
Seaside stuff.
That's nice. Presumably a Game Boy camera was not your first camera then?
I don't know, actually.
Oh, maybe.
I was trying to prepare and I didn't prepare for that question. I guess, because when I got it, I was 11. Mm. I think my context at the time was just using disposable cameras on like family holidays. So I guess it might have been the first camera I owned myself.
Right.
That's probably true. I didn't really think about that, but yeah, I think it is.
Wow.
Yeah.
What a little revolution. Like, so in my head immediately, small Sam, who has a beard and glasses still, but he's small, is in the back of his parents' car on holidays, like with double A's, playing with the camera and stuff.
Yeah.
Was it that kind of childhood growing up with it then? Were you allowed unfettered access?
Absolutely, yeah. Me and my brother, So we had one between us. We both had Game Boys. And yeah, we used it loads. Taking photos, but the other side of it was, and obviously you've used the Game Boy camera, right? Mm-hmm. So you're aware of like what it's all about. Oh, you got it there already.
I'm ready.
Yeah. So obviously the draw of it is it's a camera. It turns your Game Boy into a camera, and that's the thing that a lot of people talk about. The bit that people don't generally talk about or don't hear as much about is like everything else it can do. Mm. So the bit that I was really interested as a kid was the whole editing side of things, because like this is before I was aware that Photoshop even existed. Mm. The fact that you could do all sorts of stuff on this, like editing the photos, obviously using the photos for different things. Obviously there's games on it, so you can use the photos within the games. Mm-hmm. Obviously your face, but just yeah, being able to you know put the stamps on the photos. But then the feature I like the most was the paint mode, where you could paint on the photos. Obviously incredibly tedious. Have you used that much?
It's very fiddly. Like I remember, it's the anti Mario paint. You know, like you realize very, very quickly that there's this sort of. It's a bit like using. I don't know if you ever used Flipnote on the DS. The animation.
I'm well aware of it. Yeah.
So cool, like amazing. And this, and you should look up. Like people listening should look up online. That some amazing animations made in Flipnote and Flipnote Studio. Just incredible. And you look at them as like there's a French guy I think who does these like really bandy leg weird bird. And just incredible and puts music to that. But it's when you start to use these tools, because you're interacting with them through the interface of something that's made for making a character move and jump, you just realize how ill-equipped you are very, very fast. It's like trying to draw on an Etch-a-Sketch.
It literally is that. You're like, if anybody doesn't know, it's like you've got a pixel that you're editing and you move it left and right with the D-pad. So if you're doing it pixel by pixel, it's literally pixel art with a D-pad, which sounds like an absolute nightmare. And as an adult, it is a nightmare. Yes. But it was never a problem to me as a child. Like I just accepted it. And like there was no other option. It's like, I want to draw on this photo. This is how I'm going to do it. Just edit it pixel by pixel. I even like take a photo of the wall to get a blank frame and then use it for doing pixel art.
Oh, yes. That's
which
so
was
cool.
Like, yeah, I'm not sure whether it was like intended to be used in that way, but I've got some of the photos that I managed to save from my original Game Boy camera of just me drawing like characters pixel by pixel. Yeah. It's a bit nuts to go back to because I can't imagine really, but it takes a long time, doesn't it?
Yeah.
And you can't, it's not like a sketch where you can kind of plan out ahead of time. It's like you're committed to every pixel, and if you go wrong, you've got to
undoing is really just not an option. It's a world pre-undo. But yeah, it's
exactly,
and they had the printer, didn't they, that when the thing came out, the only accessory was like a small thermal printer. I say small.
Oh yeah,
still fairly chunky.
Yeah, I've got one of those now, but I never had one at the time. So I was lucky enough to convince my parents to get me a camera, but I think the printer was pretty expensive as well, wasn't it? But a friend of ours had one, so we did get to play with it.
it's a super cool thing. The aesthetic's amazing, and whenever I use it, I'm always reminded. Like I get very excited, and I go, "Yeah, I'm going to use the Game Boy camera. It's going to be really cool." And then I'm just remembered just how low resolution it is.
Yeah,
like, it's just because how many pixels? By how many pixels? Like 160 or something?
No, the 160 is the Game Boy screen, so it's 160 by 144 is the resolution of the Game Boy. You don't even get that. So it's smaller than that.
Oh my god.
The picture is 128 by 112. So you've got the picture, but then you've got the nice like the Game Boy border around. I guess that was like a technical limitation with the memory of what you can display on the screen, I guess. So obviously you can only save 30 photos on the cart, can't you? So maybe it was to do with that. So yeah, you've really got to really embrace the the fact that you don't have much to work with.
And so what prompted you, because I came across your stuff through Becca's video. Becca is a previous guest and friend of the show. So what was it, you're a kind of product designer, a bit of an industrial designer kind of by training. Were you sitting staring at this thing one day and like, is this a kind of epiphany in the shower moment, or what makes you pick up this thing, this piece of like 40-year-old technology nearly?
Well, I mean, it had been gathering dust, but it'd been sitting at my parents', so a bit of a hoarder, like never thrown any of my stuff away. So I've got like all my old consoles and stuff, and luckily my mum spared them and she didn't throw them away. So I'd gone back to it a few times, but I'd been, you know, encouraged by my mum to like get rid of all my stuff out of their house. So I'd basically saved my Game Boy camera. I booted it up and realized that I've got these photos on there, but it's powered by a battery, right? So as soon as that battery dies, you lose your photos. I had a bunch of photos from when I was a kid of my, you know, my parents when they were younger, and to these kind of drawings I've done and photo manipulations and animations even. I was like, I don't want to lose these. So I went down the rabbit hole of looking at, you know, how do you get them off the camera, which is a kind of a big deal in itself. But through that, I found a Discord, like the Game Boy Camera Discord, which is basically a group of people who were dedicated to the Game Boy camera. So these are people of all different professions, kind of geeks like myself, who are experts in their fields, who want to like modify and use the Game Boy camera in new and interesting ways. So I kind of like looked at what they were doing, and I saw that they were, you know, a bunch of people were trying to attach lenses to the camera. And the mod that they had was to, so if anybody is not familiar with it, it's got like the orb on top, which you can spin around to selfie mode. They were kind of changing the front molding on that assembly to attach a lens on. And I was like, oh, like, I really want to do that. I really want to fit a lens to it and have a play around with it. But I was thinking, like, I was looking at it, it looked quite fragile. It's not designed for the weight of a lens to be hanging off the back of your Game Boy. So it was like, you know, quite easy to break. So my mind started working, and I'm like, okay, surely there's a better way to do it. And then the other thing was like the technical barrier. So many people in the Game Boy Discord, obviously experts, and they're, you know, they're comfortable with that type of modification and comfortable with problem solving. But you can see there was a lot of people who wanted to do these things, which maybe don't have the confidence or didn't have the technical skills. Like, could I design it in such a way that would just make the process of modifying it really easy? And if I want to do it for myself, but if I'm going to do it, could I do it to allow other people to also do it? So yeah, that's it. The seed was planted, you know, thought about it, and I'm like, okay, I'm doing this. But this was shortly after my first son was born. As you know, not much free time. So I was like, I had a kind of a fresh appreciation of the value of free time at that point. So I forced myself to sit down in the evenings. So it's, you know, after he was sleeping, I think it was, you know, between 9 and 10 p.m. when, you know, you've got all of your energy's gone. The last thing you want to do is sit down at your workstation and boot up CAD and get technical. I'm like, okay, I'm going to do it. So I kind of forced myself to do it. I think it took me a few months to sort of get in that was working. We went on family holiday to Morocco. So I managed to put out my sort of prototype and took it with us. I got some good photos, but it had like all sorts of like light leaks where I'd not accounted for various things. Obviously designing a camera is just, you know, things to learn. But yeah, I managed to do it, managed to modify it. And that was how I got to where I am, really.
I think what's really great, and I love, I would say this in a way, because kind of this is how that's how the podcast started. It's a similar thing. It's like, here's a thing I think should exist that has a particular perspective, and I'm just going to do it. And I'm going to do it after hours, after the kids are in bed or whatever, like, just like you. I didn't have to fire up SolidWorks, but I did have to like figure out how to use Audacity and how to I love that great creative things come from stuff like that. There was a video I saw the other week. It was Kevin Smith talking about making movies and talking about why you do it. And he was like, you've got to have just the right amount of unreasonableness He's like, yeah, why not me? That kind of,
I saw that video, yeah.
Yeah, I think that's a great way to think of it, because then, like, something's going to exist. Whether it's the same in the Rick Rubin book, you know, about making stuff. It's like, just don't bet the farm on it, but create some space for yourself to do something. And it sounds like you're in the fortunate position of you've got a partner who supports you on doing this. Like, you're not giving up on kind of responsibilities to do this project as well. You're not like, darling, I am going to Turkey. I shall be back in 8 months. Yeah, you know, something you can do upstairs in like an hour before bed. Yeah. It's really cool. So what did you land on as the solution to people, for people who are listening who've not seen, because I've seen it and it looks really cool, but what was your answer to the kind of, how do you turn the Game Boy camera into something more modular?
So I've got both of them here, but obviously just for you on camera. So I've got the original has the orb that swivels around. So obviously the first port of call was to, you know, try and get to make it as rigid as possible, because it's got to support the weight of the lens. So I kind of deleted that orb. Obviously not all professional cameras have a selfie mode and you can't twist the lens around. So I thought, it's acceptable to get rid of that. So it's kind of one rigid cart now. Obviously the whole thing sticks out above the sort of the top of the Game Boy. So it's got a nice kind of circular curve plane on the back, which the lens can fit into. But kind of a main consideration was I wanted to make it as easy as possible. And with a lot of kind of mods that I've seen, in order to get to, you know, the rigidity in the part, a lot of people end up asking you to put in some threaded inserts. So you melt in the threaded into the 3D print, which obviously when you can screw into and then it's not going to go anywhere, which I have done on other projects, but that's when things get more complicated, right? If somebody comes to this project, you're going to look at that and like, okay, I don't have the right kit, or, you know, I don't know how that works. So it's another barrier to entry. So I'm like, okay, I'm going to do it without any of that. So I designed it in such a way that the strength needed is all on one part. So the part that holds the lens has got enough strength all the way down to the bottom. And then that kind of leans against the inside of the slot that the cartridge goes into. So I've got two little sort of pips on the outside, which you can see in some of the other Game Boy cartridges. There's like a one with a vibration. So I think it's like this, like a Star Wars and Perfect Dark have the little vibrator, like it's the rumble pack. They have a feature where it like wedges itself up against the inside of the cart slot so that it can hold the weight of the extra bit on top. Borrowed from that a little bit. So it's all within that half of the shell. So the outside shell is just, you know, that's just a closing piece at that point. So it doesn't need to be screwed into any threaded inserts. It's literally just holding itself on. So there's that part of it, and then it was just sort of tweaking it so the internals block any light leaks. I'm talking about the kind of the original model, and then this one that I've got right here is the second version I did. So after I launched the first version and lots of positive feedback, but then there was a few comments from people like, oh, wouldn't it be great if there was a clear shell version? Because obviously,
yeah, that was the thing. You know,
that was the thing in the 90s, isn't it? You had the clear, yeah. The clear version. I'm like, oh, that would be cool. So could I get that to work? But obviously, if you make it, you can't just make a camera clear, can you?
No.
Because then the light can get bypass the lens straight to the sensor, and then it's not going to work. The external A surface is the same, but it's kind of went back to the drawing board on the internals, the sensor. And I completely redid how that assembly goes together so that I could put like a baffle around the sensor to kind of pop all off, which got really complicated. It got more complicated than I thought it was going to be. I kind of sat down with my laptop one evening, like, okay, this is just a quick mod and what I've already got, so it should be easy. And then, or you know it, I'm like, it's taken me hours and days. Yeah,
this is the problem with people asking for things, Sam. It's like, we just go, you just do that, don't you? And it's like, it's the same in games. It's the same in making games when people are like, well, why can't it just why can't you just add an extra character? It's like, because the character needs their own animations, and then you've got, and it's like, and I have to make it run on a base Xbox, and it's just all these things where people don't think about
it.
Like, well, we've got these PS5s, why can't you just make your old game run on it better? And it's like, well, because the same game has to also run on a PlayStation 4.
Yeah, exactly. But no, I'm glad I've done it. Because I agree, it looks really cool.
But you had to put a hat on a hat, effectively, to get it to...
Yeah. So it's got a cap over that. I did have to redesign the internal part, which I've got another part where a filter fits to it. So you can fit a IR cut filter, like a normal camera. Mm-hmm. That part I had to re-engineer as well to stop any light leaks. And despite all of that, there is technically... one specific angle that if you line up with the sun,
right,
it can like refract through the shell, like, you know, on some torturous path back around back at the sensor. But it's like a very niche case. It's like perfect angle. So I've been shooting with this one for the best part of a couple of years now, and I don't have a problem with it, so, and nobody's complained. So
I think that's also in the proud tradition of video games. You've got Easter egg in there. There is an Easter egg. That's a very like a Mario Sunshine type thing. Like, if you point the camera at the sun in just the right way, you can ruin it. Like, the, you know, there was a Ratchet and Clank one came out recently. One of the makers of the most recent Ratchet and Clank on PS5 said one had found this thing, but if you go to, there's a mechanical bull in a bar in one section of the game, and on the outside there are these terminals you have to press to enter, and if you press, you shoot at them in a particular pattern, like 15 times one, 10 times the other, da da da, that then lets you go in, you can ride the mechanical bull.
Amazing.
And they just left it in the game, because at one point they were prototyping whether or not you would want to be able to ride the mechanical bull, and they decided on balance it was too hard, and so so they gave up.
But if you've gone through the effort of doing that, like, very difficult action, then you really want to ride the bull, right?
Yeah, well, and this was the thing, the designer on the game put that Easter egg in. He's like, no one's found it yet, but he's like, it's there so I can play it, so I know, so I can go back and play my thing. And it's just like, wow, the audacity. But yeah, very cool. So that's really nice. So you make these parts available for people to download and make themselves, because the modification, like, it's also worth saying, it's a non-destructive mod to the Game Boy camera. So if you do this, because I've had to fix my Game Boy camera, I got one as part of a bundle. So during the pandemic, I learned how to mod Game Boys and put them in new cases and stuff like that. I did one for my boss, and one of the bundles that I bought on eBay happened to have a Game Boy camera with it, which he didn't want.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
So I kept the camera, but the camera lens was scratched. So I then had to go and buy another Game Boy camera to salvage the lens from the Game Boy camera to put... because that Game Boy camera didn't work properly. It didn't work properly. It had... it was very lucky. It had corroded contacts. I found a Game Boy. I think it might have been the other way around, actually. The one that arrived had corroded contacts and didn't always work. Yeah. And it was corroded so badly that I couldn't clean it off. It was physically damaged pin.
Okay.
That camera was always going to be intermittent and weird. So I found, but its lens was fine. I found one online with a scratched lens. Bought that. Yeah. Disassemble. But you can put your Game Boy camera back together, should you choose, can't you, after you've done this modification?
Yeah, exactly. Because obviously, like, finding a broken Game Boy camera is quite rare. I was very aware of, like, I don't want to be destroying or responsible for so many people, like, destroying their Game Boy cameras. I designed it such a way that it uses, so obviously you need various screws to perform the modifications. So I wanted to make use of all the existing screws. So apart from the CS mount, the C to CS mount adapter you need, that you need to buy separately. You don't need to buy any of the parts, because you just reuse all the screws and bits that's already in the camera. And then if you keep the leftover bits, you can just reverse it afterwards to make the other camera again. And it's not a particularly difficult mod to do. The most difficult thing is threading the sensor through the little swivel mechanism. But once you got the hang of it, that's easy. So I was just very aware of making sure that I wasn't responsible for that. I hate the thought of just destroying a load of Game Boy cameras. yeah, so that was another part of, you know, the brief that I set myself just to make things more difficult.
I think it's wonderful. I think you've done this in exactly the right way. You've set yourself the right, you've approached it in the right manner, which I think is key. That I love the reuse and the repurposing and the fact that it can all just go back the way it was if you choose.
Yeah, yeah.
And also it's worth sort of embarrassingly complimenting you. Like, it looks like a real piece of Nintendo hardware as well in the way that you've designed it. You're very sympathetic to the aesthetic of the thing as it was. Mm-hmm. Like, you can imagine that this is a prototype that escaped, you know?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, that was another conscious effort to keep the... It's got kind of a little backpack, isn't it, really?
Mm.
Obviously, part of that is to support the mechanism for the swivelly head. But the other part of that is to create strength in the part that you need so that it doesn't fall back on itself.
Mm.
So not only aesthetically, it is similar with that backpack kind of feature, but it's doing the same functional thing. It's there for the same reason.
Yeah.
But also it happened to line up nicely with the kind of the diameter of the circle you need for, you know, the land you need for the lens to fit.
Yeah.
And that lined up quite nicely. Kind of fell together. Yeah.
So did you have much familiarity with those type of lenses before you started working on this? Because are they like CCTV lenses or?
Yeah. So they're just dirt cheap.
Yeah.
Really bad quality security camera lenses.
Yeah. But it sort of doesn't matter on a 100. I mean, resolution are we talking?
In
megapixels. It's like.
It's in megapixels. I wrote it down because I'd forget. 0.014 megapixels.
That's amazing.
Yeah. Yeah. So it really is good enough. Like, you know, you obviously still get the distortion and that kind of stuff, but you're not going to get a much better lens. Obviously, you can use better lenses, but
sure,
it's the perfect form factor, really. It's the most compact way to get that functionality.
Yeah.
And I mean, that's another thing to mention about design. So in the Camera Plus mod, the main one, I've got an adjustable bracket that you mount the sensor onto. So as you know, the position of the sensor has to be absolutely perfect in relationship to the lens to get your focus. Obviously, if you're 3D printing parts, you're not going to get that kind of tolerance. It's not going to be right off the printer. So I printed the bracket separately so that if you want to use a fixed focal lens on this, you can, but then you have to adjust the sensor.
Right.
Which is another barrier.
Yeah.
Because that is incredibly tedious.
Right.
However, if you use a zoom lens, then you can just sidestep that problem because the zoom, obviously, you can manual focus.
Yeah.
And you could just focus it onto the plane wherever that is.
Yes.
Obviously within a bracket. So the zoom lens is kind of a crucial part of the mod if you want to do it very easily.
Yeah.
So you can just whack it together. Don't worry about how straight the sensor is or anything like that. Use a zoom lens and within seconds it's focused and usable.
Yeah. That's so cool.
But yeah, this lens is just what it allows you to do creatively is really fun. Like, that's kind of the main point of this being existing. Mm. So this is a 5-50mm lens,
right?
But as you can imagine, the sensor from the gimbal camera is tiny.
Yeah,
tiny little sensor. So the crop factor of the sensor is 10 or just over 10.
Oh wow.
So that means that this lens is equivalent of like a 50-500mm lens.
That's
which is
50-500. Yeah.
Yes.
Which is the other reason, I guess, you've got so many pictures of birds because now you can see them.
I mean, yeah. I can just zoom in on anything. Anything I want to take a photo of, I can take a photo of. And I like kind of street photography and being out and that kind of stuff. But as an introvert, I like to be distanced from a subject. So I can literally be in pretty much another postcode from the person I'm taking a photo of, which it just opens up another like amount of creativity of like you can take a photo of. So like what I love taking photos of is there's a specific point on the common down here at the seafront, which is actually below the promenade level. So if I'm on that common, a distance away from the promenade, I should say, then I can like zoom in and get like a perfect silhouettes of people on the promenade, which is really lovely. But then obviously at that sort of focal length, you get the compression as well. But it's really feels like, you know, like a level on Mario or something where you've got characters walking along.
Nice.
And then obviously being a busy seafront, you get all sorts of characters, lots of stuff going on. Like got there's a road there, so there's cars going past, bicycles, motorcycles, there's all sorts of stuff happening. So really good opportunity for finding creative uses.
I think this is amazing because up until recently, this is the only camera Nintendo has ever shipped, right? Like they've just shipped effectively a webcam with Switch 2. Yeah. No creative camera applications for that thing, as far as we know at the moment, which is a shame. Like, you know, the Joy-Cons have mice built into them now. They should bring back Mario Paint like that.
That must
come back. On the subject of mods, I've thought about this a few times. I've never done it. Because it would be potentially destructive. But taking a Super Nintendo mouse from back in the day and turning that into a Bluetooth mouse, that would be the coolest mouse.
Like,
that Mario Paint mouse is great, but it would involve finding one, dismantling it, taking the cable off. I think you can probably do a USB mod. You could probably connect it to a computer in some way. I say this as someone who's using a keyboard that's going through two USB adapters to make it work. I have an Apple 80s keyboard that goes through a USB-A and then a USB-A to USB-C. It goes through two dongles currently. But yeah, I feel like turning a Super Nintendo mouse into something must be a thing that could be done. It's just you'd end up removing the innards of that mouse and replacing it with a Bluetooth innards potentially rather than use the ball.
Yeah, with the right engineer, I bet could do that easily. Because you could do it where you use the shell and you just replace the PCB. You know, like some of the 8-bit DOE controllers packs where your controller, which essentially just removes the PCB.
Yeah,
you keep everything else. I imagine similar thing. And I bet there's people out there that will want to do that.
Yeah, oh, it'd be so cool. But I did years ago. I made a Mister. Have you ever come across the Mister?
Emulated
console thing. So for listeners who don't know, the Mister is an FPGA board, which is a type of board used in electronics development that can kind of, if you're designing circuits, you can kind of load your design onto this generic, capable of becoming any circuit or chip or whatever that you want within reason. And it's really good for emulation because it can pretend to be the original hardware. And so during the pandemic, I picked up one of those and I put it inside a Wii Mini that they did toward the end of the Wii's life, which was a little red and black, like it was so they could sell a Wii for less, basically. Like they took out unnecessary components, so it didn't have Wi-Fi, I don't think. It didn't, like, there were a few things it didn't do. And it was sold primarily, I think, in the US and Canada. And I managed to pick one up on eBay. And I took it to bits and put the Mister inside and got a friend who's an electronics engineer to, like, connect up the power button for me so I can use the power button. And, it looks pretty good. I painted it white. Like, it's got a little Mister logo on the front. It's pretty cool. Yeah. But I did get some flack on Reddit from people who were like, but you destroyed a perfectly good Wii Mini.
And I kind of
had to go, well, yeah, okay, fine, I did. That's fair. But look how cool my Mister looks, you know? Like, it was a tricky thing, and it's got like a rainbow fan in it and things like that. But the damage you can do with a little, with some hot glue and a screwdriver.
Mm-hmm. Hopefully you don't feel too guilty about that.
No, I've kind of moved on past the Mister now but this is why I approve so much of your approach, you know, to your camera. And,
Well, there's all sorts of like crazy mods, isn't there? Like, I'm just thinking to, you know, like 3D printing has come on a long way in the last 5 years or so. And thinking of the, you know, there's people who are, somebody has recreated the Sega Neptune that never actually existed.
Right.
But they, you know, they 3D modeled the case to match the prototype. And when you see it printed and painted, it looks like the real thing, right? So for the same, with the same thought, you could probably have 3D printed the Wii Mini sort of surround.
Yes. Yeah.
But probably. Also with the, all the right details so that you've got everything lining up and specifically for, and more ideas for more modding projects.
Yeah, and you're right, actually, because 3D printing something like that, but being inspired by the original. There is a company you've just brought out, I think it's a Mr. Compatible, like it's a kind of knockoff of the design, because people, because those D10 nano boards were getting hard to come by and they're not really made for that purpose. But I did see one company, I think, have brought out that's modeled after the PS1, the second generation, the first PlayStation, the small round one. And it's not an exact replica, but it's different enough they can get away with it, but close enough that if you look at it, you're like, oh, wow, it's a PS1.
Yeah, it's got the same feeling. Yeah, yeah, I have got one of those in order.
Oh, have you? Cool.
Yeah. It really kind of hooked me in. So I've got all my old PlayStation games and having that. Because, the hard part of having the old consoles is obviously you can use it on a CRT, but then having it in our lounge on a modern TV is a bit of a pain to get it looking nice. So then you can bisect that problem. You get the HDMI out, but you can use your original discs and then plug in your original controllers. So you get the tactility and the kind of the user experience of the original, the pads. It's obviously definitely a part of it as well.
Yeah, it really is. And I think it speaks to, I think the reason that there's often an overlap in like the video game stuff and or technology and kind of gadgety stuff and cameras is because a lot of it is about feel. A lot of it is about the feel of pushing those buttons and the way those dials and stuff work. I think, you know, it's real. The reason that like I like my Leica and someone likes their Fuji and other people like their Canons and Sonys and whatever, it's like that feel matters to people when you're because it makes you want to pick it up and use it, you know.
Completely agree with that.
I was gonna ask, because I noticed something on your, one of the things you've done and played with as well, and I've seen, I'm sure I've seen something about this before, but I've never known quite how it worked. You've converted, so because the Game Boy camera is black and white, it's monochrome only, but you've converted some images, it looks like, to some sort of color, and I don't know how that works, whether it's colored filters or what.
It's probably more simple than you imagine. It's just using the kind of trichromatic photography workflow, if you're aware of.
I'm not. Yeah, I need education.
Okay, so you can. So I think it's something that was done. So I don't know the full history about this, but it was something that was done like back when photography was black and white to produce color photos. Right. So you can do it on a black and white camera, on black and white film. But basically, you take a photo. You take three photos with your RGB filters in front of the lens. Right. So you're basically capturing just the greens, just the blues, just the reds.
Right.
And then taking those three black and white photos, bring them into Photoshop, do some Photoshop wizardry so that they, you know, into the different layers, the different channels, and then that produces your color photo. Right. So it's the exact same thing, but with a Game Boy camera.
Wow.
Yeah. So that's why I had to put in the little bracket in front of the sensor, which allows you to put an IR cut, because obviously you need the IR cut to filter out the infrared, because that'll ruin your color photo.
Right.
Because it was a notice that a lot of people were trying, you know, it's another bit of, it's just something you can try, and it's a bit of fun to try and get a color photo out of your black and white Game Boy. So I wanted to put that in there as, you know, you can go down that road and go to that level.
The process at that point then is, and this is insane, I love saying this out loud, it's the fairly slow Game Boy camera, which already is limited to 32 shots. To do that, you need to mount it on a tripod. You need to find your subject. Hope to God your subject is something like some flowers or a tree and it's going to stay still. Get in focus, blue filter on, shutter, green filter on, shutter, red filter on, shutter, and then somehow get those three images off the camera and then apply post-processing in Photoshop to make one, to make the red one red, the green one green, the blue one blue, lay them on top of one another, the right bits cancel each other out. This is tremendous. People, this is amazing.
It's like, it's absolute insanity, but when you talk it through. But that's not to mention like all of the other limitations of the Game Boy camera, right? Mm. So there's limitations of the pixels, which you've mentioned, but the other limitation is the depth. So you've got four colors, four shades of green.
Yeah.
So that's where the 2-bit comes into it. It's a 2-bit right. focus. You've only got four different colors.
Yeah.
And then the way it achieves, obviously, the in-betweens is by dithering. But obviously, that gives you, it's got a very narrow dynamic range.
Yeah. It's not 16 so stops, that, is it?
No, exactly, yeah. So that's something else you've got to consider and okay. fight with.
Wow.
It's very limiting, but for me, it's the creativity you can get out of those limitations.
Mm.
It changes the way that you take a photo when you're walking down the street.
Yeah,
you can see everything from a completely different standpoint. Like it's something that you would normally think, oh, that'd make a good photo. You take a photo with Game Boy and it looks awful because there's too much detail
yes.
in the background, so your subject completely is lost. And likewise, something that would make a bad photo on a typical camera, we might make a really good photo on a Game Boy. So you just got to completely open your mind. And
yeah. Do you find that carries over then into when you carry, because presumably you like carrying a normal camera around as well.
Oh yeah, yeah.
So
yeah,
yeah. Does this carry over into like sometimes you'll be in the mode. I was in London recently and really struggled taking photos because there weren't any trees around. Like I couldn't quite get my head into photography in a city again, in an urban environment. It took me like 20 minutes to kind of get my head around there are buildings and it's different. Ironically, I found a tree and then I felt better. And then I was like, it was amongst the buildings and it sort of helped me mentally bridge it. But do you find then it's useful or not useful? Do you have to switch gears?
I definitely got two, like a partition in my mind for the two different modes, I think. Because you obviously two different mindsets. I have thought about trying to replicate the kind of things I'm leaning into doing with the Game Boy on a digital camera. But I looked into how it would be possible, but I'm just not sure how it's possible without having some like ridiculous kit of lenses and spending a lot of money. Because the kind of range that I can get with this lens, you know, 50 to 500 millimeters in one lens, does that exist?
Don't think so. I mean, you'd probably get, I'm trying to think, like the crop, the zoomy ones can kind of go up to like 280 or something. So like that's one that springs to mind for like the L-mount system.
Yeah.
And that's full frame equivalent. So if you were to put it on something with a smaller sensor, maybe you're getting close to 500.
Yeah,
but it probably doesn't go as close as it doesn't go as wide as 50 then. So if it starts like, I don't know, 90 to 2 something, and that was its full frame starting point, then on a smaller sensor, 90 is going to be 120 or 150 or something like that.
So
it might be struggle to get that package one.
But the thing is, like, I do actually use all of those focal range lengths. So like I will crank it back down back to like 50 for a shot and then straight back up to maximum zoom. So it's definitely, I've got used to that kind of workflow in the moment. I don't have to change lens or anything. I'm just there, I see something, I'm just straight into that, you know, zooming in on that bird that's on the ledge. I clearly see it's like its pupils.
So cool, like the bird's beady eye.
Exactly. And then obviously I can control, that's the other thing that it allows me to do is obviously the Game Boy camera doesn't have any control of aperture or anything like that. This lens allows me to control the aperture, which is really good. And then obviously you've got the varifocal ring on it as well. But it kind of makes it all kind of like a hybrid between all the manual camera and then like the digital aspect, obviously restrict digital aspect.
That's so cool, man. Can you, or do you think it works? Because I can imagine this working well in an urban environment, right? Thinking back to the game, like when you turn the game on and it's got lots of, it's got the person in the Mario costume in front of a clean background and stuff like that. presumably they worked out fairly early on that like plain backgrounds, clean backgrounds give you that subject isolation and things like that. Do you think it works better in a kind of cleaner, well, not that it's always clean, but like in an urban setting where you've got kind of a sharper distinction? Because I've tried mine in the woods and stuff, and Game Boy camera photos of woodland are dreadful. Because
I've discovered that.
Yeah, there's just way too much. You kind of, like you were saying, like, you know, yeah, there's just too many things that it could be trying to resolve, and so it resolves nothing. It just becomes pixel soup.
But
I'm assuming that, like, this is really well suited to somewhere where you've got some plain backgrounds and some harsh lines and maybe some shadows.
Yeah, definitely. It's exactly that, exactly what you just said. It does work really well with sort of repeating patterns. They're quite nice to play with.
Right.
I guess the other aspect of the zoom, which is really nice, is I don't know, maybe you've got some experience working with graphics through the computer game stuff, but again, kind of pixel perfect on your assets. So with this, obviously, that's more important. So if you're taking photo and there's like a lamppost, for example, you don't want that lamppost to have like all the aliasing artifacts and stuff. You want it dead straight, pixel perfect.
Yeah.
So with the zoom, you can zoom and tweak it just enough so it's taking up the right amount of pixels, and then it like, you get that really nice, clean air. Oh, or either horizon line or, you know, these other things. So it really allows you to do that. But then you get to tweak if there's like a, you know, like bricks or some other sort of patination, you can zoom to the extent where it repeats in synchronization with the pixels, so that it looks really nice. It's all that kind of stuff you can play with as well, which is nice.
It's very, very cool. Like, I do feel the process we talked about turning these things into color, I keep mentally coming back to that. I'm just I'd love to try that. That would be so cool.
It is. I've got to warn you, it is difficult. Because you've got to have, I don't have the proper filters for it. I think you really, to do it properly, I think you really need like the proper filters with the correct stops.
Yes.
You know, so you know that, you know, this filter is letting through, you know, it's
eliminating only what you want.
So you can compensate that later on in Photoshop. So I'm just using some cheap filters.
Yeah.
And it's just a nightmare.
Yeah. Oh, that sounds amazing. Though. I mean, but even the learning, it reminds me of the engineers. Is it like the engineer's prayer? Like, we didn't do this because it was easy. We did this because we thought it would be easy.
Yeah. Yeah. You're persevering anyway.
Yeah, exactly. You're here now. Like the sunk cost fallacy. You're like, right, well, I've got to keep going. I feel like you with the translucent case. There was a point where you were halfway through and you're like, well, I've pulled enough of this stupid thing apart now. I now have to finish.
Exactly, yeah. Well, if you do open up that can of beans, can of worms, you'll see one of the things you've got to worry about at that point is that obviously you've got the dithered patination on the photo. And obviously that isn't giving you like an exact gray, is it? It's giving you an approximation either side.
Mm-hmm.
So because you're taking three different photos, you want that pattern to align to give you the correct colour. And if it doesn't align, then you'll get some random colours popping in. So then you've got to account for that as well. it's pretty deep.
That feels like either something you lean into and you just accept as a limitation, or a job for noise reduction. In something, you know, like you would, let's train some sort of software model to recognize Game Boy 0.01 megapixel noise patterns. But I feel like that's the kind of thing you could lean into.
Well, the other thing is, it's worth mentioning though, in terms of like the using the Game Boy camera for photography, is that if you're out with your digital camera, you can take a photo and then you can edit it afterwards. You can, you know, adjust the white balance after the fact if you want to, and all that kind of stuff, or the exposure to an extent. But with the Game Boy, you can't do that.
No,
you're stuck with the photo you've taken, and the only way to really edit it is by getting into pixel art.
Wow. Yeah.
So you have to get, you know, your horizon light line dead straight.
Yeah.
Because you can't adjust that. You can't rotate it. You have to get your exposure like exactly right. Your pixel perfect lamppost, if you've got that in there, that's got to be correct. So it really forces you to like pay attention in the moment.
it's so fun. I was gonna ask actually, because obviously it's not shooting RAW, it's not really shooting JPEG, it's just shooting pixel, like it's a bitmap effectively, you know. When we grew up, it was just BMPs, you know, for days in Microsoft Paint. It's that kind of level of quality and fidelity. Can you kind of tinker with this stuff? Like, I guess you can kind of resize it and you can mess about with it in programs like Photoshop and sort of play with things like that. Do you know what the ISO sensitivity is for a Game Boy camera? Like what it's equivalent to? Because it's got to be like, what, like 50, 60 ISO? Or something. It's not high, is it?
No, not at all. No, I don't know what the figures are. I'm not sure if that information is even available. So when you're shooting with it, if it does get into a sort of a dark scenario, you can see it flick into a different mode. Maybe it's like changing the voltage that's going to the sensor or something like that. But if you notice that, and then it kind of flicks, and then all of a sudden you've got an awful photo. So like when you're in, you know, adjusting your aperture to try and get it right, then you'll accidentally go over into that dark mode and it'll kind of...
I've definitely seen that in pictures, like let in low light. It's kind of the Game Boy. What we recognize it as now, and I would never have recognized it as that in the past, is noise. Like as you say, it's the voltage being increased to the sensor to compensate. They do like let it jump out. I have seen that, like when I've done stuff in my office that looks fairly bright on a modern camera that's adjusted and got software to compensate, but it's not really that bright.
Going back to using it in Photoshop, just kind of stitching photos together to make panoramas, that's quite fun thing to do. You can actually do that as a feature of the Game Boy camera, like in the Game Boy camera, can't you? It was the original mode which allowed you to do horizontal and vertical panoramas, but obviously then if you're doing it yourself, then you can just go crazy and fill out a scene if you want, which is really nice. But that's when it gets tedious. You're like aligning all your photos, and then that's when the distortion, there's no like Photoshop algorithm for like fixing that, so you go down a rabbit hole of sort of, oh, if I delete those pixels then it lines up to here, and then before you know you spent a few hours.
That's where you need your tripod out again. Like what you're describing to me now is a reason for me to get a 3D printer, because what I need to do is immediately, I also need to make my own bracket, although I have somewhere around, I have a Manfrotto bracket that might fit. I use an analog pocket more than an original Game Boy these days, because it's got a great screen on it, and that's, you know, it's really nice. And that, you know, works really well. Although with a Game Boy camera, because the cartridge is so big, it doesn't fit quite, you know, there's no cover on the back of these things.
I've got mine here as well. Yeah, what I noticed was I had problems with it because it doesn't like hold the cart. I guess they did that so you could see the artwork on the cartridge.
Yes.
But because it didn't hold the cart, when you touch the top of it to turn the lens around,
feels...
you can knock it and it'll just stall.
Because you've disrupted the connection. Oh man.
Which is a bit of a pain.
I need to practice the panoramas because I've never really played with those. Have you ever used the add-ons that you can get that use the data port to kind of effectively be able to let you pull images off? Because on the Pocket, what I do is I go into view, into the playback in the gallery, and then I screenshot it. And then they get saved to the SD card. Then you can just pull them.
Oh yeah, and they're already upscaled, are they?
The original. The original. I'll send you afterwards a link to my Flickr album of Game Boy. They're hilarious. Like looking at them on a desktop, they're just so tiny.
yeah, it's a bit of a problem, isn't it? Trying to review your photos and they're like, because you Windows will pop it up, like zoom in, but it all blurry and you can't see what's going on. I don't use that method. I have a little cartridge flasher, which you can use for, you know, putting ROMs onto cartridges, if you want to do that, if you want to go down that rabbit hole. But you can also use that to pull the save files out, and then you can pull out of the save file.
Yeah.
So I do that when I'm using the original PCB. But I guess something that we've not spoke about is the other Game Boy camera mods that I've got on my camera.
Right.
It's a deep rabbit hole. So
this is why the podcast exists, is to go down rabbit holes.
Okay. So I'll start with one that a lot of people do. Is there's a modification made by a guy called calls himself HDR, and basically he re-engineered the Game Boy camera like main PCB, so it had its own flash memory, so which enables you to flash different ROMs to it. So I think the main reason I think he did it was so that people can experience the limited edition versions of the cameras that were available. So you could get a Zelda version of the camera. But obviously they're extremely rare now. They go for like thousands of pounds. So it's not like you can get hold of one to have a go easily. So you can flash that ROM to your camera. So you can have a go of that version of the camera. So it has like different stamps and all that kind of stuff in it.
Nice.
Which is cool. But what that opens the door to is then you can flash software to this camera, right? Yeah. Whatever you want. So you could put any game on it at that point.
Yeah.
Or because that door's open, there are other dedicated individuals who have gone to the bother of creating their own software for the camera.
Oh, wow.
So there is more than one custom software you can flash to a Game Boy camera, which turns it into a more sort of adult camera.
Right, okay.
So you're not using a Nintendo software at that point. You're using software which has been designed by a software engineer. And it gives you more control over all the typical things, you know, like your sensor speed, shut speed, but also things like the dithering pattern you can change. You can even change the voltage to the sensor and all loads of other things that I don't fully understand, not being a software engineer. But it gives you a lot of possibilities. And then the one I've got in here now is made by a different guy, a company called Inside Gadget. And that it does a similar thing, but it allows you to basically record continuously. Equivalent of, you know, holding your shutter down, taking a burst. You can do that in this now, so it's just recording every frame that it sees. So if you're in a scenario where something's moving quickly and you want to really get the shot, then you can, you know, kind of record. this one actually features a USB-C.
So I noticed the port on the side. I wondered what that was for.
Yeah, so this one, you can literally just plug it into your computer and use the bit of software and pull the images off. But it is... you know, there's obviously there are all the pluses, but the downside is that you end up taking way more. Yeah. So obviously in the original, you've got 30 photos. This can take thousands of photos, which is a bit of a negative when you've got those tiny thumbnails.
Yes.
And you've got thousands of images and you know that one of them was a good shot.
Yes. Yeah.
You end up burning a lot of time.
Yes.
It does take away some of the, you know, when you've got 30 photos, you've got to shoot very carefully, and you maybe take a few photos and then you go you review them and like delete the ones that weren't so good, and then you're very precious about it. It definitely changes that mindset, so it's kind of pros and cons. But
very fun. I guess you would call it photography.
Yeah
I suppose would be a name. I'll have to look up the links and put them in the show notes for the episode so people can go that's very appealing, being able to play with the special editions. Do you know how many special editions there were? That sounds fascinating.
The Zelda one, and then there was the unreleased Hello Kitty.
A sentence.
Yeah. Yeah, so the story is that they released... Yeah, I don't remember when I was a child, but Nintendo released a bunch of, like, Tamagotchi-style... little mini Game Boys.
Yes.
So you could get it like, you know, the Pokemon.
Yeah.
Get it with like Pikachu in it. Yeah. But there was a Hello Kitty one. So you had a little Hello Kitty and it was like pedometer.
Yeah.
But in the box for that was a little leaflet, which promised the future release of the Hello Kitty Game Boy Pocket.
Right.
And this is the only image that exists of this thing. So it's just like almost like a mock-up. It looks like a graphic designer at Nintendo has been asked to put it together because it's in the works. So he's kind of put it together. It's not even like a photo. It looks like, you know, they've just drawn it. Yeah, it was never released, but there was a Nintendo leak, wasn't there?
Oh, a few years ago, yes, they got hacked. Yeah.
And there was a load of stuff released, and in that release was the Hello Kitty ROM.
Wow.
Which was completely finished.
God, they've done that before. Yeah, that's so wild.
So, yeah, it got leaked. It's not particularly easy to find, but you can find it. It exists in, you know, on the web somewhere.
Yeah.
You can get hold of it. And if you do, you can flash it to a cartridge and have a look at what could have been.
Wow. Which is interesting. Yeah. And cool.
And it's funny because the Zelda one is mostly the same experience with different stamps, and some of the characters are different, but it's the same sort of experience. But with the Hello Kitty, they changed quite a lot of stuff. So the way you use the camera is completely different. Mm. So the menu structure is different. So yeah, it's quite interesting how they did that.
Yeah.
I suppose they had a bigger hand in the Hello Kitty experience.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. Oh, that's brilliant. How cool is that? I had a friend once who used to work at Nike. He worked with Apple on the Nike edition Apple Watches that they did. And I said to him, that must have been really cool. And he'd be like, not really. They just told us exactly what we were allowed to do. And so it was actually very, very specific. You can change this and this and this. You can do that. You can't do this. Not as much fun to collaborate, as it turns out, you might imagine.
Yeah.
They're like, no, we've got to ship this thing. You've got 5 minutes to make these changes go.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Oh, man.
Yeah, so I do wonder, what happens, why that fell through. But, yeah, who knows? It's
there was a time. Well, there's a game got announced recently that's it's a spin-off from Metal Slug. That was a Game Boy game, and the original cartridge was designed to have a GPS chip in it and antenna and all that stuff. And it didn't release, but the game was finished. And now it's coming out for Switch. They're bringing it out, and they've done a localization on it because it was rumored to have existed, and it was a similar thing. I think there were screenshots of it from magazines from back in the day, and then it just disappeared. Yeah. But finished game, sitting somewhere on someone's hard drive for nearly 20 years, and then eventually someone turns around and goes, Dave, do you want to do something with that thing? And it just happens, and then it turns up, and suddenly it's a thing. It's very strange when stuff like that happens.
To be a fly on the wall and on in the right time to find out what happened.
Yeah. Just amazing. I mean, it's like that Batgirl movie and a bunch of other things. Like, sometimes things get made and finished and people put their heart and soul into them.
Yeah.
And then they just sit in a vault somewhere.
Yeah.
Just think, why? What a shame.
But it's cool that they managed to, whatever they did to make it happen, to re-release it. It's amazing that they managed to pull that off.
Yes. Oh, yeah. I mean, I think there comes a point eventually when enough people have not spoken to each other for long enough, and enough water has passed under the bridge.
Yeah.
There's that Mortal Kombat collection that's coming out that brings back together the two people who were kind of very instrumental back in the early days, like Ed Boon and whoever the other guy is, I can't remember his name, but they're talking again now. Enough time has passed. Or like Liam and Noel, right? Eventually, and in their case, eventually there comes a point where you're just like, do you know what? We're one of the biggest bands in history. We should probably go on tour again. That would set us up for life again, wouldn't it?
Yeah, they'd be fine. They've got enough distance from whatever happened so that they can see the light.
Well, it's that combination, isn't it? We've got enough distance, and also we know that we'd only have to do it for 6 months. What's the worst that can happen? We can get we can afford separate coaches. It'll be okay, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Everybody's going to be happy.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
No, wild. But yeah. Well, Sam, this was brilliant. A very unusual episode of the podcast to be talking about effectively one camera system for the entire thing, but such an unusual and unique one, isn't it?
I hope everybody's happy with that. We've not really mentioned Leica.
No, exactly. Well, and I get made fun of for that all the time. Heaven knows. Yeah. Next week I'm going, as we're recording this, because when it comes out, I'll have already been. But next week I'm going to Wetzlar for 3 days for their centenary event. So heaven knows there's enough Leica content coming for the Leica fans. Yeah. Don't worry, they will not be wanting for Leica content. But yeah, well, if people want to get hold of a mod kit or find out more about the mod kit, where should they come and find you online to have a look?
Okay, my place which is easiest is my Instagram, which is, my handle is 2bitsboy. And I've got a little mini website that I put together just to put all the relevant information about the kit, which is 2bitstoy.com. So yeah, everything you need to know is there, and like links to instructions and stuff. And then, yeah, I'm happy to be contacted by anybody who wants to ask any questions if you've got any issues. Yeah, happy to support.
Yeah, well, as is a testament to the fact that you turned up here, which is super lovely. Finding people online is it's the best bit about doing this, actually. It's like sitting down and having a conversation with people is really nice, but there's a lot of excitement and Sherlock Holmes and fun in kind of tracking people down and finding a contact address and stuff like that.
Oh, right, yeah.
It's really good. Oh, brilliant.
No, it's really nice to hear your enthusiasm.
And
to be taken half seriously.
Well, I think it's brilliant. I think, you know, like Ali, former guest and friend of the show as well, Ali O'Keefe, you know, no bad cameras. Like, as... Yeah. Because in the right setting, this creates something that is super cool. Like, in my head, there is a kind of way of making some cool Game Boy images with a different lens and blowing them up big and doing some big, prints of, like, these tiny, you know, like, just make the pixels massive. Like, just print a Game Boy image, but the size of a wall, right? Like, that would be cool. And, like, you're talking about, like, that we're getting... getting effectively tons of images and turn them into like giant pixely animated GIFs or visual, like visual artists make computational visualizers that play with pixels and stuff all the time. Like, you could do that with the limitations of this hardware. I love the idea of finding some random walker on a hill and they're like, they've got something on a tripod, you know? And they're like...
It's literally pixel art, but in you're taking it live.
No, I love it. That's brilliant. Well, thanks so much, Sam. This was great.
Thank you for having me.
Oh, absolute pleasure.
Nice.
Yeah. Well, have a lovely rest of Sunday. Enjoy the rest of your day.
You too. Thank you very much.
Take care. See you later.
Bye now. Bye.
How good was that, eh? Wasn't Sam good? And my big question, have you gone to eBay yet and looked up the price of Game Boy cameras? Let's see if we can spike the price of Game Boy cameras. Let's see if we can create a market. I've never done that. You know, Ali, Emily, people like that, they spike the price of cameras all the time. Let's spike the price of Game Boy cameras. Join me, friends. Buy as many Game Boy cameras as you can. Or if you're selling one, increase the price. Don't do that. Don't do that. But do get hold of a 2-bit toy. And do that. Whilst you are scouring eBay, don't forget that you can also subscribe and rate and review the show wherever you listen. That will really help to promote us and for people to find us. So you can do that in Apple Podcasts, in Spotify, YouTube Music, Amazon Music, all the places that fine podcasts are served. Please do that. Please do rate and review the show. And if you could do me a favor now that I'm doing this solo and trying to make this my job, if you could just share the show with one person, that would be fantastic. Like, ping it over to someone and say, hey, I think you might like this. That would be amazing. Thank you so much for listening. Don't forget, you can also sign up to the weekly newsletter. That comes out every Wednesday, and that's available at ianfarrell.com/sign-up. Right, I'm off to go and take pictures with my Game Boy camera. Have a fantastic week, and we'll see you next time.